Okay. So, the tabernacle is our new series. We're going to talk about the tabernacle. And we are going to look at not only the things that they did to build it, which is a part of it, and it's a real part of what it was. God gave very specific instructions to have this built. So, in general, the tabernacle, like we were having a little conversation before, is a moving church, okay? It's a moving church, but that is just the most general way to look at it, because God was very specific about things, and when he's very specific, there's a reason, okay? He gave very detailed instructions of how big it was to be, the proportion it was to be, the materials that each thing were to be made out of, and as he went through each one and how it was to look, and all of the pieces of what you might call furniture that go inside the buildings, although it's not furniture like you and I have necessarily, but it is all sorts of parts and pieces that are a part of this tabernacle. So what is the main purpose of a church?
To preach the gospel.
Okay, yes, you're right. Before the gospel happened.
To sacrifice to God for sins.
Okay, so there is one piece that you mentioned, sacrifice to God. Okay, and you mentioned specifically for sins. Okay, that is a piece. But think higher view. What's the point of what we do in church? Why do people come to church?
To worship God.
Okay, worship. There's one reason. Worship. Okay, what else? What does worship do for us?
Helps us learn.
Okay, helps us learn about specifically God, right? And what it does is it gives us access to God. Okay, now, why have a church if God is everywhere?
So that there's a place for the people to congregate.
Okay, it's important for the people to congregate. That's one piece. And it's important to do and teach people about God, learn about that, sacrifice for sins, and those are things, and there are several things that happen inside the tabernacle. And it is very, very important to understand how God fits into the human race, or doesn't fit, okay? And that's where God doesn't come down and pal around with us, okay? He's not saying, you'd be my best buddy. He is the immortal, invisible God. He is all powerful. He cannot be touched. He cannot even be looked at by a human. What happens if humans actually looked into the glory of God?
They die.
They die. So, that kind of poses a problem. Why do they die? What's wrong with humans?
They're imperfect.
They're sinful, right? And the glory of God can't look upon it. So, this is a process. The tabernacle, in a very, very high level view, is the process in which God taught people how to approach him. Okay? church is how we approach God, but the tabernacle was very specifically built in a certain way for the Jewish people to say, this is how you approach me. Now, it seems very simple. We just put together a little bit of the model here, and we're going to talk about just about what we put together tonight, basically, minus we didn't get the curtains on the outer rim. But we're going to talk about a bigger picture first, okay? So if we go to Exodus chapter number 29, verse number 42, we're going to look at the story. Much of the story of the tabernacle is in the book of Exodus. But you will also find, as we learn about it, it is interwoven in many ways throughout. And this is something that really surprised me. The more that I learned about the tabernacle, the more, and I've known about it since I was a kid, but the more that I learned about the parts and pieces and started to look at it and said, there are parallels in every part of this tabernacle, okay? It is all about something bigger. Why this tent that they traveled in the wilderness of? Why put up these posts? Why put in this holy of holies and holy place? And why all the sacrifice? And why within a tent? Why not just have the sacrifice out in the middle of camp? Wasn't that okay before? Because who used to do sacrifices out, just outside?
Abraham
did sacrifices outside, right? And so did others, okay? Many of the other early fathers, particularly Abraham, but the other ones until Moses, they didn't have a place to go. And it's not necessarily about a place of belonging. There was a great lesson that God said, specifically do this. Specifically do this. Make it out of this. Make it this size. Put this in here. Don't ever do this. Always do this. Okay? He had a whole series of rules. And so, let's look. Exodus chapter number 29, verse number 42 through 46.
This shall be a continual burnt offering throughout your generations at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation before the Lord, where I will meet you to speak there unto thee.
And there I will meet with the children of Israel, and the tabernacle shall be sanctified by my glory.
And I will sanctify the tabernacle of the congregation and the altar. I will sanctify also both Aaron and his sons to minister to me in the priest's office.
And I will dwell among the children of Israel, and will be their God.
And they shall know that I am the Lord their God, that brought them forth out of the land of Egypt, that I may dwell amongst them. I am the Lord their God.
Okay, so you get a little bit of an idea what God says is important about this, okay? He said, I will meet you there. This tabernacle, or this tent that we make, I will meet you there. All right? So a lot of people have said, well, I can meet God anywhere. And it's true. You can have an encounter with God in your home, in the middle of the night. You can have it in the wilderness. You can have it in school. You could have it at work. You could have it in the car. Yes, you can encounter God anywhere. But God specifically says, this is my way. I want you to access me, and I will meet you there. And where is this going to be? It says right in one of those verses where this tabernacle is to be. Verse 45.
Israel.
It's going to be amongst the children of Israel. Okay? This is an important piece, and we'll see. In the camp of Israel. Now, remember, your history, your Bible history, right? And what happened? We have the Mediterranean Sea, the Nile River, right? The Red Sea here, and then the Sea of the Dead Sea up to the Sea of Galilee. This is Israel, and yes, it's all perfectly to scale every time we do it, right? So here's what it is. They came from Egypt. They were slaves, they were freed from Egypt. They came over and they ended up crossing the Red Sea in a very deep spot, right? Through an act of faith, they cross around dry land, they go out, and where do they go?
Out into the desert.
Yes, but where were they supposed to go?
Israel.
They're supposed to go up into the Promised Land. It was about an 11-day march. And in 11 days from when they crossed that sea, they could have been in the Promised Land. And they went to send spies, and they did all those things to see if they could do it, but they just didn't have the faith. They didn't believe. Okay? So yes, they did ultimately end up wandering in the wilderness for 40 years until the entire generation passed away. Before that happened, they stopped on a mountain, or at the base of a mountain. And at the base of this mountain is where Israel camped. Okay? Israel camped there. God had given them instructions for the tabernacle, and we are going to look at that instructions by bits and pieces over the next few weeks. Take it apart, help us to understand each of them for what they are. But there was an intention to have in the camp and this tabernacle. And the tabernacle was to be in the midst of Israel. This is what I want for you. I want to put this tent in the midst of Israel. So their camp was here, okay? And what they did when they built this was their camp was basically, if you kind of have a big round group of people, right? They would camp kind of in pie shapes, 12 tribes of Israel, and I know that's not 12, but whichever here. They camp in here, right? You have Zebulun and Reuben and Daniel, Ephraim and Manasseh, and all the tribes of Israel are going to be around in this, camped in their group, their family groups. God says, I want that tabernacle in the midst of you. That's my intention. Okay? Place this thing in the midst of it. And the front entrance, which we will see here eventually, and we'll talk about in a few minutes, the front entrance was to be facing always to the east. When you set this up, you're going to face it to the east. I think this is the one. No, I think this is the one. There is a front entrance. Okay. It will go in. There'll be one fancy entrance that is always to be facing to the east. Obviously putting this side to the north and the west and the south. And there'll be this border of a curtain around the whole thing. Can't see over the curtain. It's tall. You can't see over the curtain. And to give you reference, basically, these are supposed to be somewhat to scale. Here's our little guy. We'll call him Aaron. Here he is. Okay? Inside of that tabernacle, inside of that original outer court, and it created an outer court with these posts and this big long set of curtains, okay, that they put around. Now, all supposed to be in the center, and God says, I will dwell in the midst of you. Right? He says, I'm going to make some holy things out of this. I'm going to sanctify not only the place and the things that happen inside, I'm going to sanctify or clean and make ready for worship particularly picked them out, Aaron and his sons. Okay? Aaron and his sons were to be the high priests. The Levites, which were all part of the tribe of Levi, actually camped basically all around the tabernacle. Okay? And their jobs were to do the work of the tabernacle. The tribe of Levi was given the work of butchering the animals. That's a lot of work. Not only are you butchering small things like doves, but you're butchering sheep and you're butchering whole cows, multiple of them. And you are in service of this group, which by the time they left Egypt is estimated to be around 2 million people. All right? That's a lot of people. A lot of people. All right? And so they are serving the sons of Levi. Specifically, Aaron has high priest duties. Okay, we'll talk about those in time to come. But the sons of Levi have the work. There are people that carry the parts and pieces of the tabernacle. When they move, they pick up those pieces. They take down the curtains. They take down everything down to the Holy of Holies. After God leaves the Holy of Holies, his presence leaves the Holy of Holies and says, "We're ready to move." They take everything down, they pack it all up, and they carry it. And specifically, you know, they carry by poles some of the implements, and specifically the Ark of the Covenant. They were never to touch the Ark of the Covenant. Because again, even though they are sanctified for the work, they are not perfect. The Ark of the Covenant is what God said, you build it this exact way, and when you place it inside and close up that curtain inside of the Holy of Holies, my presence will come and sit on that box. It is not to be touched by human hands. And there was a time, and I'm sure we will look at that, where someone reached out and touched that box and instantly died. Okay? Instantly. And you say, well, that's cruel. He's just trying to help. God was not messing around, and he wanted you to understand who he really is. Okay? And the tabernacle begins to teach this to the people that have lived with really very little but the stories of Abraham, right? And the 12 tribes of Israel, those stories that they get from Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and eventually Jacob and his sons are those 12 tribes that are enslaved for 400 years. So they don't have a place to worship. They have a God, and they know who he is by the tradition of their fathers. They have been told. And they know only by word of mouth. Moses was the first to write down those first five books of the Bible. So think about it. They lived that entire time in Egypt without a book of the Bible. Nothing written down. Now the book of Job may actually have been older than the books of Moses and written earlier. So that may have been around, but not a lot. Okay, there was not a lot out there. So if all you had was the book of Job, which was all about what? You know the book of Job?
It's about Job.
Yep, Job suffers.
Yeah.
He loses everything. Okay, so here he is. He says, I'm going to dwell in the midst of you. There, he's going to do it. Except when Moses goes up onto that mountain, he is up there for a long time. Days and days. He takes Joshua halfway up the mountain, and he goes the rest of the way. And by the way, the mountain is shaking and smoke and everything else, and Moses is up in there. He comes back with the Ten Commandments, right? the Ten Commandments on two stone tablets. Okay? Here's my rules. This is what I want you to do. This is how I want you to live. There's just 10 commandments. He's already given them the setup for the tabernacle. This is how I want you to build it to approach me. Okay? Here's your 10 commandments. Moses comes down the mountain, and what are the people of Israel doing?
Dancing around a cow.
Dancing around a cow. Right? And the cow was not a real cow.
No.
The cow was a gold calf. And when he was questioned about it, Aaron said, well, you know, I told the people to take off their earrings, and we put it in the furnace, and out came this cow. Like you didn't. Had to make a mold, didn't you? To make it look like a cow, right? You had to do this. It didn't come out on its own. They knew they had done wrong. And in God's eyes, they really had done wrong. And it had only been days, literally days, since they were saved, since they had been brought across the miracles of Egypt, okay? The plagues that they saved, that God saved them from Egypt. And they watched them all, and they lived, and they walked to freedom, and then as soon as they did, oh, look, there's a cow, let's worship the cow. Right? And God then says something different. Right? God is very angry. So let's continue the story in chapter 32. Verse 1 through 9.
And when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down out of the mount, the people gathered themselves together unto Aaron, and said unto him, Up, make us gods, which shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we wot not what is become of him.
And Aaron said unto them, Break up the gold earrings which are in the ears of your wives, of your sons, and of your daughters, and bring them unto me.
And all the people brake off the golden earrings which were in the ears, and brought them unto Aaron.
And he received them at their hand, and fashioned it with a graving tool after he had made it a molten calf. And they said, These be thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt.
And when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and said, Tomorrow is a feast to the Lord.
And they rose up early on the morrow and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and to drink and rose to play.
And the Lord said unto Moses, Go get thee down, for thy people which thou broughtest out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves.
They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. They have made them a molten calf, and have worshipped it, and have sacrificed thereunto, and said, These be thy gods, O Israel, which has brought thee up out of the land of Egypt.
And the Lord said unto Moses, I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people.
Okay. I'll read the next couple verses. Now therefore, let me alone, that my wrath might wax hot against them, and that I may consume them, and I will make of thee a great nation. Moses besought the Lord and said, Lord, why doth thy wrath wax hot against thy people, which thou hast brought forth out of the land of Egypt with great power and a mighty hand? Wherefore should the Egyptians speak and say, For the mischief did he bring them out to slay them in the mountains and consume them from the face of the earth? Turn thy fierce wrath and repent of this evil against thy people. Okay? They do bad, very bad, right? And God is angry and says, I'll just wipe them out, Aaron. Or Moses, I'll just wipe them out. And I'll make a whole new set of people from you. Now, does God desire to wipe them out?
No.
No. Why does he say this to Moses?
To
test him, I guess.
He wants to teach Moses and have Moses live through mercy. This is what you're going to get. This is mercy. I want you to know. This is mercy. Okay? And so when that happens, Israel sins greatly, and Moses intercedes on their behalf and says, if you won't do it, then you'll have to take me out of the book of life. You'll have to blot me off your list, your book. And that is what God wanted to teach Moses, was to love the people. Okay? Because God has a love for the people. But God is going to teach them through his next actions and many, many actions that they have to understand what they're doing. Right? He has to teach them, and so they grow and learn what they're doing. And in chapter 33, verse 7, he was given specific instructions, 7 of chapter 33, and Moses took the tabernacle and pitched it without the camp, afar off from the camp, and called it the tabernacle of the congregation. And it came to pass that everyone which sought the Lord went out under the tabernacle of the congregation, which was without the camp. So God's intention originally, right? I'm going to live right in the middle of your camp. But then they sinned, and God says, take it out and set it up here. Why are we setting up outside? What changed?
The people stopped worshiping God.
Stopped so believing.
He doesn't want to be around them.
Well, he's still teaching again. He can't be around sin, right? They turn their backs on him, and he can't be around sin. So now, instead of surrounding it, you have to make a special trip. You have to come to God. And this is where the beginning of the change, okay, not that this, that God knew these steps would all take place, right? But God wanted to teach them to say, you will have to make an effort to come to me. You'll have to make an effort to give your life to me, to go to church, to seek me. I'm not going to just live right in the middle of you and make it easy, because you won't have me when I'm in the middle. You're going to have to take a hard path to get there. Okay? And that is the human experience, typically. You will have to seek the Lord. You will have to seek me. Because before he says, I'll meet you there, right? And I'm going to be right in the middle of you. But now he says, you got to seek me. You got to find me. You seek me, I will be found. All right. So, you dwell in the midst of these. So what is this big picture? Well, let's turn to John chapter 1. John chapter 1. And this is a fascinating thing. You probably know this verse. I hope you know these verses. John chapter 1. Verse number 1 and 2. 1, 2, and 3. 1, 2, 3, and 4. We like those verses.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word, and the Word was with the God, and the Word was God.
The same was in the beginning with God.
All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made.
In him was life, and the life was the light of men.
Okay, so who is this that we're talking about? Who is the Word?
Jesus.
Jesus specifically, and we don't really know that yet by those words. But if you skip down to verse number 14, it specifically talks about the Word again. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. And we beheld his glory, the glory of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. So the Word, we find out, is God. The Word was in the beginning. Everything was made by him. Jesus was that Word. And Jesus became flesh. Okay, and you know that story. This is the story of the gospel, right? But the interesting thing is, in that verse 14, Jesus became flesh, the Word became flesh, and dwelt among us. Dwelt is a word that is used really only once in this, and it would be in Greek, okay? In the Greek it's used. And you know what that word dwelt means? Dwelt means pitched my tabernacle or tent. The Word became flesh and pitched his tabernacle among us, amongst the humans. Because wasn't that God's intention in the beginning? Right? If you look that word up in the Greek, you find it is specifically referring to the pitching of the tabernacle. He came down to live amongst us, pitch his tent. Now, why is it a tent? It's temporary, right? So was Jesus' body. It moved with him. He's living amongst the people. He's not up in some palace away from the people. He's right in with the people. He grows up, has a mother and a father, carpenter. He works amongst the people. He lives amongst the people. He preaches amongst the people. He is condemned and he dies right amongst the people. Right? I came to pitch my tent there. Came to pitch my tabernacle. Because the real importance of the tabernacle is a picture of God. And I told you, it was, I will meet you there, right? It's access to God. Teaching you about God and who He is. The tabernacle begins by teaching you those things. How do we approach God? Jesus becomes the tabernacle, the approach to God, right? He's the way. In fact, we find out not only is he the way, he is the door. And specifically, how many doors were in the tabernacle? We didn't cover this, but only one. Why not? If you're pitched in the middle of Israel, why not have 10 doors, 12 doors?
Because there's only one way to see God.
There's only one way to see God, okay? You're beginning to connect some of the dots, of which there will be hundreds more dots when we dig into what it is. But just the very tabernacle itself, existence, moving out of the camp saying, you have to come get me. But when Jesus comes, pitches his tent on earth, he's right back in the middle again. He's right accessible to everybody. And he's the one door. And that's why there's an outer court. Why not just have this? Why not just have the stuff that he's going to have outside? Fine, have the little building. Isn't it a lot less to carry? Sure it is. But that's not why they're doing it. They're doing it because God says, you need to understand, you will have to approach me. You're not going to be able to see me from afar. It's an experience where you, to get to me, you enter through the door. It's the only way to get to me, is to enter through the door. And you might walk around the outside of the temple, and what are you going to experience, or the tabernacle, what are you going to experience if you're outside of these big curtains?
The curtains.
The curtains. What else? If everything is happening inside, they are sacrificing animals and cooking them on burnt.
Noise.
Noise. Smells. From maybe you'll catch a whiff of incense that happens in the holy place. More likely that's when you get closer though. But you might. Okay? The idea is that there is this outer ring. And there are curtains in that outer ring. And that outer ring really keeps you really separated. Keeps you very separated. Okay? Exodus, back to Exodus for just a minute, and let me read a section here. Exodus chapter number 27, verse number 9. I'm going to read about the outer court. And thou shalt make the court of the tabernacle, for the south side southward there shall be hangings for the court of fine twined linen of 100 cubits long. So that's 150 feet long. Okay. And the 20 pillars thereof and their 20 sockets shall be of brass. The hooks of the pillars and their fillets or fillets shall be of silver. And likewise for the north side in the length there shall be hangings of 100 cubits long. Okay. So also north and south are the same length, okay? Sockets of brass and pillars and their fillets of silver. And for the breadth of the court on the west side, there shall be hangings of 50 cubits long or 75 feet wide. So it's 75 by 150 feet, the whole thing. The hangings on one side of the gate shall be 15 cubits, their pillars 3 and their sockets 3. And the other side shall be hangings 15 cubits, their pillars 3 and their sockets 3. And for the gate of the court shall be an hanging of 20 cubits of blue, and purple, scarlet, and fine twined linen, wrought with needlework, for their pillars shall be 4 and their sockets 4. And the pillars round about the court shall be filleted with silver, and their hooks shall be of silver, and their sockets of brass. The length of the court shall be 100 cubits, and the breadth 50 everywhere, and the height 5 cubits of fine twined linen, and their sockets of brass. Okay? So these are sockets and posts. It describes all the posts to hold everything up. Some hangings. So it's intriguing. If you come up as an outsider, it's intriguing. You catch the smell of meat. Hear the noise. Maybe laughter. Maybe singing. You see, yeah, I can't get to this, right? It's on the other side of this curtain. There's something happening, and I don't know if I want to be a part of it. But I don't know I don't want to be a part of it. And then you approach the east side, which that door, that hanging of blues and purples, it's beautiful. It's the only way in, and it has a unique beauty different than the whole rest of the covering. You're either attracted to go in or not. It's the same way with someone who comes up in the Christian life, approaches God, and says, I kind of like what's happening inside that church. I don't know what's going on in the hearts of those people. They're just different. I hear they sing, they talk, they laugh. They have this strange way they treat people with love and kindness. And I just don't know what to do with all of that. I don't know if I want in there, but I think it sounds like they're having fun. And something amazing might be happening in there. That is the goal of the outer court of the temple. You don't get to approach God just by seeing it and checking it out before. You might catch little bits of smells, little bits of sound, but you don't get to see what really happens till you go inside, till you make the choice to go through the door. If you make the choice to go through the door, all of a sudden the life is inside. Right? One of the reasons why I built and keep Aslan's Acres like I do, it's one of the main purposes, my inspiration for that was the tabernacle. Way deep inside, behind the brush and the nasty and the wet and the junk that you can see from the road, which doesn't look like much, we hope there's a much deeper experience inside. But you can't see much of that from the road. That's the idea. You might catch a glimpse here or there. And the idea is to be attractive, but to say there's something very deep about what happens inside of there. There's something very unique about what happens inside of the temple, the tabernacle. I want it. And I've had so many people come in, where they deliver stone or something like that, and they drive it, and they're like, I had no idea this was all back here. It's the very same way with the tabernacle. The idea is you had no idea what was behind that curtain until you crossed the door. Till you accept Christ, until you say, I'm going to have a relationship, I'm going to walk through the door. It's a beautiful door. I'm going to go through there. I'm going to see what God has for us. I'm going to see what, on the other side of that curtain, I'm going to approach God. When you walk in, it'll be very foreign at first. Very different. There's cows and sheep and birds and people, and there's blood and there's fire and there's huge bowls of water. Like, what is going on here? Nothing seems normal until you begin to understand why it's there and what it's about. And each piece is specifically shaped and designed to bring us nearer to God, help us understand God a little bit more. So that's why we're going to talk about this tabernacle, all the pieces of it, okay? But understand, it's that attraction. Jesus comes through and I'm going to pitch my tabernacle right amongst the people, right? Come in and see what God's all about. He's the door. Come in and see what God's all about, right? Come in and learn about him. So the picture of the tabernacle is a preparation for the Jewish people for Christ to come. And we'll find out lots more next time. All right. Thank you very much. And we'll get you put together some more next time.